Blog Talk Radio.
Again from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Dr. John Stamey, and I want to welcome everybody to ScaryCast. We've got another incredible show, great guests, great co-hosts, and we'll have a lot of fun tonight. So first of all, I would like to introduce our co-hosts from Augusta, Georgia. The man down there with the Bigfoots, Chris Chastain. How are you doing tonight, Chris?
Good evening, John. I'm doing great. My second favorite night of the week. Happy to be here.
We're glad you're here. As everybody can probably hear that roar, I'm driving over the Wilmington Bridge into downtown Wilmington for a bit. Anyway, great to have you here. And from Houston, Texas, Kyler Smith. How are you doing tonight, Kyler?
I'm a little sweaty because it's insanely hot out right now, but back in the car. It's great.
It's freezing up here. I mean, we have this front that's come in. It's cold. I had the heat on the car a little bit today. But it's supposed to get warm starting tomorrow. But that's great. Glad to have you here. Now, tonight, back by very popular demand, we've got Professor Mulgrew from Parts Unknown, as we say in the wrestling business. He's from Parts Unknown. He is a master and craftsman in the world of radionics, and knows a lot about what many people would call the paranormal world. So, Professor Mulder, it is a pleasure to have you back tonight on ScaryCast.
Hello. Hello there, Dr. John. Well, I guess I got promoted from doctor to professor this week. Is that correct?
Yes, you did.
And please, oh, tell the audience, how come? Why did you decide to start calling me professor?
Professor is a designation from a university or from other folks who have been associated with the university, such as myself, in recognition of the massive intellectual accomplishments that you have achieved. You know, as they say, many people can get a doctorate, but not everybody can be a professor. And you have far exceeded the entrance requirements to be a professor. Your knowledge is incredible. And you do such a great job in explaining things to me and other folks. So we have kind of designated you on this show, Professor Mulder. We're glad to have you here. And so now, we discussed in the green room a little bit was that we would talk a little bit just more about radionics, and then we're going to talk about a topic that's near and dear to me and probably to a lot of other people listening. I'll save that one for later. So, Professor, I'm going to turn it back to you to get us started as we kind of review last week's lesson on radionics.
All right. Well, where did I leave off? I mean, where do you want me to start?
Well, I would say just recap what radionics is. Oh, I've got a question. Is radionics the same thing as psionics?
Psionics is more of a technology that really doesn't – I think it has something to do with shapes and that kind of a thing. It's more of a mental, psychic type technology than I would say radionics is. That's a good way of putting it. Even though I say I'm psionic research in my email, it doesn't necessarily mean I concentrate on psionics. But, in a weird kind of way, they're both the same.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. I had come across that in my reading this week. I've done a lot of reading on radionics this week, I'll tell you that. And it's been very, very interesting. You clarified a lot of things for me. And one thing that I would now, I know you're very, very familiar with the topic. Do you know, or could you explain to everybody how people in agriculture use a radionics machine? I think that is extremely interesting.
Well, I know one person that was using radionics to relieve himself of bug infestation in his apartment. And he said, he told me this, you know, a certain time of year he'll get spiders and centipedes. These were the two insects that he had a real serious issue with. And simply what he did was tune the machine. I think he had a spiritual entity. It was an archangel. I don't remember or recall which one it was. But he had a written statement for all the bugs to disappear from his apartment. And he tuned the machine just for that very thing. And he told me as of right now, and I spoke to this gentleman, I guess about 3 days ago, as of right now, he has not seen one insect. And so that's an example of how radionics was used when it comes to, that I know of personally, when it comes to controlling insects. Now, what I've, this is legend, because it's like you hear it from a friend who heard it from a friend. And so what I understand is basically that the U.S. Department of Agriculture was designating, or they wanted to do some testing with this technology. They had a wheat field or something like that out in the Midwest. And they plotted everything out so they knew which section they were going after. I think they either had not a satellite photo, but a balloon photo or an overhead photo of the grid of where, of a grid of the field that they wanted to work on or try to do the testing. And so they have that to work with. Plus, I don't know if they were using, say, some kind of an insecticide or what have you as they call in the radionics, the witness sample, or just something that represents what it is you're trying to accomplish. And that's how I understand it. I may be wrong. This is just what I heard. And so they put these two items on the input of the machine. They would tune the machine for there to be no bug infestation. And then they would take the thing that represents the target only, which would be the picture of the field itself, put that on the output, leave the insecticide or whatever it was that they were going to use to eradicate these insects or these pests on the input side. And from what I understand, within a matter of 1 to 2 weeks, there was no sign of insect infestation on this particular part of the field. Again, that's all I know. It's kind of sketchy, to be honest with you there, Dr. John. Like I say, you're just hearing word of mouth.
Right. Well, there's an old book which has been out of print probably since the early 80s. It's called Magic Science of the Future. And there's a whole chapter about T. Galen Hieronymus, who is essentially the inventor of the modern radionics machine. Would you say that's a reasonable characterization of Dr. Hieronymus?
I would say that, yes, he took it up a couple of notches, that's for sure. I've seen, I actually own the, I think I mentioned this before, I own the exact same model that Hieronymus used in his research when we first started. And so I would say, yes, he took it up a couple of notches as to, I've seen different variations of his machines, but a lot of it, I think the electronics were basically resembling an audio amplifier with inputs and outputs and certain things, other circuitry that was performing different functions. But I think the heart of his devices was an audio amplifier of all things.
Right. And I think from what I have read and what I understand from you, the purpose of this is to take the user's intent, like the intent of getting rid of bugs, the intent of making something successful, and taking that intent, amplifying it as it goes out into the world. Would you say that's the correct a correct way to describe a radionics machine?
Yes, I would. That's the way I would basically describe it. Mm-hmm.
Ah, maybe and, I got that from you.
What? Yeah. Okay. But yeah, again, the most important part of these machines is the operator. Okay, it's garbage in, garbage out. If you're not mentally focused, if you're not in a good frame of mind when you use the machine, then your results may not be as good as if you were focused on the project at hand and were, you know, had a good positive attitude. You know, you can visualize its completion, that kind of a thing. Yeah, if you have that state of mind when you are using that machine, I assure you, your results will be so much better.
Gotcha. I mean, and it's a matter of the old PMA, positive mental attitude, those three letters that come from W. Clement Stone and Napoleon Hill. You know, a positive mental attitude for most everything will give you a far greater chance to succeed. Don't you agree?
Yes, because with a positive, you know, mental attitude, you're looking for different options. You're always looking for solutions. With a negative attitude, you're basically, you know, there's no hope. You think, okay, you have this mess in front of you, and there's no hope of cleaning it up or straightening this mess out. And if you have that negative attitude, you're right. And like I said, either if you think you can't do it or you think you can do it, you're right both ways.
I mean, right. Attitude is, in a way, a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, that's what I've always thought. And what's nice is you've got a device that takes your attitude, and it will really help magnify it, and it will give you a better there are no guarantees in life, you know, but it will give you every opportunity to amplify your desire and your intent, and hopefully it will make it better. And so it's so simple, isn't it?
Yes. Again, it really is. And I think we were talking about this last week where some people equate it to magic. Well, in a weird kind of way, they both have similarities. I agree with you as the operator. And in one case, when it comes to magic, it would be the sorcerer or the witch, the wizard, whatever you want to call them. And, yes, they have their own tool sets, you know, the potions and that kind of a thing. But... you know, again, the beginning, the most important part of each scenario, whether it's with radionics or whether it's magic, the important part of this is the operator. It's the person behind it, the person that's pulling the controls, you know, that's turning, you know, steering the ship. And that is the most important part of it. You know, it just, again, it's just a tool. Nothing more, nothing less. And I think, I don't know if I used the analogy last week, but I'll use it now. Think of radionics this way. You could go, you could walk down the store, you know, down the street and get something, or you could drive down to the store and get something. You're going to accomplish the end result is the same. You're going to the store. It's just a one way. It's faster and easier than the other. Okay, it's that simple. And again, it's just a tool. And I don't like to glorify it any more than that. I mean, people we'll look at it and just say, "Oh, this is just fantastic." Well, yeah, it was a vehicle to help you get there, but you're the one that did the work.
That's exactly right. Well, I think, you know, I just wanted to clarify a little bit about what radionics is and what a machine looks like. Is the correct term a radionics machine, or is there a different term that we would use?
I hear people say radionics boxes, radionics machines, instruments. You know, I'm not picky personally. I don't, you know, I usually just call it a machine myself. That's just the term I use. But, but again, I've heard it from all all different, different people here, different people who are involved in radionics. And again, I guess it just depends on what's, whatever you decide to use or what's comfortable for you. There's really no right or wrong answer to that.
Right. Now, I think I first heard about radionics when I was 16 years old. I have always dreamed of getting involved in it, and then quite by accident, although there aren't many accidents in this world, quite by good fortune, I met you, and you knew about radionics, and you've taught me a good bit. And what a radionics machine looks like, it's got a standard one has 9 dials, and you just turn those dials to the correct settings, and lo and behold, you're done, and you just let it run, let her rip. So that's all.
Yeah,
it is.
Let her rip.
And now, Professor Mulder, where, if somebody, if somebody wanted to buy a radionics machine from you, where would they go to do that?
You have two ways, just to buy directly from me. And since, I guess for this particular, I tell you the best way to go, the best route to go is you can use my email, psionicresearch@gmail.com. It's spelled psionic research@gmail.com. Or you can check out radionicpower.com. I think those are two ways you can get a hold of me, or you can get a hold of Dr. John. I'm sure he'll be more than happy to direct all correspondence to me.
Just hit me up on the ScaryCast Facebook page, and I'll direct you right over to Professor Mulder, and that'll be great. Now, we discussed a little bit that we might delve into another topic that is, well, a lot of topics are related to radionics. And one that we were going to talk about is the Mandela effect. So why don't you, let me do this. Before we move on to the Mandela effect, do Kyler or Chris have a question? Kyler, have you got a question for Professor Mulder?
Actually, yeah, I do, really quick. So you mentioned you wouldn't tell someone that thinks, they got a bunch of negative things going on in their life to use it. So then I guess my question is, hold on, I'm driving too. I'm going to pull over real quick. My question is, with the shutdown, with this pandemic, like, everyone is very emotionally unstable, whether they like to admit to it or not. So even if they don't, think that they are thinking negative things, but they still want to use it, I mean, do you have a suggestion on, how to change their moods to get what they're actually wanting into positive ways, or just not use it at all?
Well, again, it's one of those things. Can you think positively about an end result? So, I mean, can you think to yourself, no matter how bad things are, can you see in your mind something actually materializing, a goal or what have you? That's kind of a hard question. We all have our off days, and I've used these machines. I wouldn't say I was, in a bad mood or depressed about something or what have you when I used it. But, again, I kind of got to the point where I'm sort of not emotional about this. I mean, I don't have a dog in the fight for a lot of operations that I do this for. I mean, I really don't feel happy, sad, or anything like that. I feel indifferent. But some people, when they're dealing with these machines, the emotions will play a part. And it's like anything else. I mean, you attract more flies with honey than you do with vinegar, number one. And, I've seen people that have been in, dire straits, and they still have positive attitudes, and they were eventually able to work their way out of things or make their lot in life better. And, again, it's about positive mental attitude of having a little faith in your future. I don't know if that really answers your question. This is the way I look at it. Some people, they may be, predestined to do or to have, you know, fits of depression or certain mental, I'm going to call them disorders, you know, certain mental issues, and they may have to, you know, seek, you know, higher help than what I can provide, or somebody that's professional, that's really something they do, is help people with certain mental disorders. I guess it depends on a case-by-case basis, you know, when I think about it. But, you know, yes, you can use it when you're in a bad mood. I'm just saying if you're in a good mood and you feel positive, that's when you're going to get your best results. I mean, you'll get results either way, but you'll get your best results when you're in a positive mood and you can visualize what it is you're trying to accomplish.
Right, okay. So you're just saying pretty much that it's not a life or death situation. Like, if you're in a bad mood, it's okay.
It's okay, yeah. But, you know, try to be, you know, think positive, you know, think about the end results. You know, what is it you're trying
right,
to accomplish?
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
okay.
Professor Mulder, can I offer a piece of advice here? And again, now this comes from Napoleon Hill. You may be in a bad
right.
position. Like, you may not have enough money to provide for your family or to keep a roof over your head. Things may not be going well, but you can focus on a task or a goal and kind of like lift yourself out of the, I hate to use this word, the badness going on, and you can lift yourself out of it and focus on the goal that you want to accomplish. Now, Kyler, you and I have talked about some of this, and does that ring a bell in terms of Napoleon Hill? Regardless of how bad things are, you need to isolate what you want to do to try to get it done to improve. Would you agree with that, Kyler?
Absolutely. Yeah, the more you focus on it, the more it grows.
Right. And so if you just – I would say – and so Professor Mulder, does that seem to make some sense? Regardless of how bad everything might be, focus on the important goal that you have and use that energy when you're programming your radionics machine. Does that seem like a reasonable piece of advice?
Yes. I mean, basically, that's pretty much what I just got finished stating. You know, focus on the end result when you're tuning the machine. Focus on that. And, you know, and that's really my advice. And, again, I don't get emotionally involved in a lot of operations that I do. I really don't. I'm just setting a machine for something to happen, and that's it. And I just walk away once it's set.
Right. And isn't it also interesting, and then, Chris, yes, I know you're going to be next, but I wanted to make one point. Isn't it interesting that these machines can work even without electrical power?
Yes, that is correct. And like I said, do they work better with it? Of course, they're designed too. But will they work without it? Yes. I mean, the machines I first started building had no electronic circuits in them. They were just basic designs. But for whatever reason, and I still, you know, I have my theories and my hypotheses as to why they may work. But, yes, they will perform even without electricity, whether they have the electronic circuits in them or not. And I think, I don't know if I mentioned before, when Joshua P. Warren did his webinar concerning the wishing machine, and he opened up this device, and it really looked strange. I have to admit, it was very weird. It had basically copper cones in the wiring, and then they had something that resembled the schematic from the old Hieronymus machine that was in there, and they had leads from I think the outputs of either the input or the output of that schematic of that circuit of that machine. Were attached, I think, using hot glue. It was an actual wire that was feeding into the circuit that was coming off of that schematic, and they had it, you know, attached again to the connecting points on that schematic, and it worked.
Okay,
it worked.
And thank you. And you also know of a client of yours who has lost the power to their machine, And they're still noticing that everything's working. And you and I have discussed that a couple of times, haven't we, Professor Mulder?
Yes, we have. Yes. And it sounds to me that the results that they're getting is far, far, far better than they thought it would ever be. I don't know if I'm over-exaggerating, but they sure do seem like they're very happy.
I know. And in fact, I'm familiar with that person. And they said that it's just incredible what's happening, and they're sitting there looking at it in their house, and it's a box. The power cord doesn't work anymore. The red light in there doesn't work anymore, and the damn thing is working. So, I mean, it's just amazing. So, anyway, thank you. Now, Chris Chastain, we can't leave you out of this. I'm glad Kyler had a couple of questions. What questions do you have for the professor?
Yeah, so I think I had to say this before. You have to dumb it down just a little bit for my unscientific brain. But when it's not connected to power, did I understand right? I think you talked about this last time. There is still there's magnets inside of it. Is that correct? There's a magnetic effect.
No magnets. No,
there's no magnets
inside of this. No. I have little machines that do have magnets, but they're for an entirely different purpose.
Gotcha. So when there's no electricity whatsoever, it's just a box with, you said, you know, different controls. There's some type of copper wiring, I think you said, but there's nothing powering the machine whatsoever. Yet it seems to be working.
Correct. That's what we.
That
noticed.
Is phenomenal. That is
yes,
phenomenal.
It is. Yes, I'll give you an example. I have one of my oldest machines. It's I think I mentioned this before in the last show. It's made by a company called Case Brothers. It was built in 1924, and the model name was MagnaWave. Okay, that thing has probably not been plugged into a wall since the 1950s. And I've used that machine, and again, it has all the the electrical circuitry that's involved with this is still intact. The had a DC, I guess you'd call it a DC generator in the back, had some capacitors or something along that line, and all this stuff is still intact, though it was never plugged in. And I was able to use that machine, and that machine had fantastic results, no problems whatsoever. The stick plate operated as designed. The results I was getting were phenomenal. And again, a machine that's designed to be plugged in but still performed as advertised with no electrical power.
That's incredible. And you were saying before that when you're operating it, you are actually kind of doing a tuning type job. Isn't that, did I understand that right?
Correct. I think last week we were referring to, that every situation, whatever it may be, has basically an energy signature. There's a particular frequency to it. And what this is doing is tuning into that frequency of what it is you're trying to accomplish on a particular situation. And so that is it. That's really what you're doing. You're doing this via the potentiometers or the variable resistors that we discussed last week. And different models will have different amount of dials to them. Some of these very expensive machines will have like just three dials to the machine, so maybe four. And some I've seen as many as 20 or 24 dials to them. But these were very, very highly crafted units, and they were very, very precise for applications they were built for. So, everything has an energy signature. You're turning the dials to that particular signature for something to happen. And I have all the answers? Do I claim to have all the answers? No, I don't. I'm just telling you what my observations are.
That's pretty cool.
Leaves you kind of speechless, doesn't it, Chris?
Yeah.
Well, you see, now, Professor Mulder, I read something today from my old book. Then it said the image is the object. It's like the machine can't tell the difference between a picture of a field and the field itself. And I think that's an unusual and wonderful statement, don't you?
Yes, I would say that that's probably correct. You know, speaking of pictures, I mean, at one time they thought, oh, the only thing you can use is a Polaroid because it's going to capture the energy onto the silver emulsion that's on the film itself. And that's all you can use is a Polaroid camera. Well, heck, I've used the cutouts or just printed something off of the internet onto a regular, you know, office paper, you know, that you would use, the 8.5 by 11 standard copy paper. And this wasn't a Polaroid image. This was just an image off the, you know, off the internet. And I've had great results. So I kind of poo-poo that idea. What I think it is, again, I think it goes back to the operator. Whether they're looking at a field while they're tuning the machine or looking at a picture of that field while they're tuning the machine, at the end of the day, it's still the same field.
Right. And one other thing, in the 50s and the 60s, they used to go off about using an old photographic negative. But what you're saying is that doesn't matter. You can, in fact, I read something from a magazine that said someone simply drew a picture of what they wanted to be affected, and it did.
Correct.
I mean, you know, wasn't exactly the greatest picture.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've driven, you know, there have been certain sigils, for example, that don't really represent anything spiritual.
Okay, hold on. I've got to explain to everyone what a sigil is, because I had to learn this from my buddy who's a sorcerer. A sigil is a symbol. It's a symbol that represents something. Now, is that what you know it to be, Professor Mulder?
Correct. I've seen certain sigils. You know, they have different geometric formations in them, you know, triangles, squares, circles, whatever. And but supposedly they represent a certain location, whether it's for money, for love, romance, you know, to gain employment, whatever it may be. There's so many out there for so many different things. But at the end of the day, all it is, it represents what, you know, it has an energy signature of, you know, within itself. And it's just something to help the operator whenever they tune the machine to reinforce that idea. Whether, you know, say Joe Blow is looking for a new job, and they're using a sigil that represents employment, and all that's doing there is psychologically. Plus, I would say the energy signature of the signature itself is coming into play when you tune the machine. And so, that's, again, using these two objects together, I've seen people get fantastic results. I've done the same myself. I mean, if I didn't have a copier readily available, I mean, I've done as much as take a lead pencil, a number 2 lead pencil, and just draw the sigil. I'll see the image on the computer screen and just draw the sigil on a scrap piece of paper and use that as a witness sample. It doesn't have to be printed. It doesn't have to be embossed in gold leaf or anything like that. I mean, it represents the same thing. For whatever reason, that pattern represents a certain energy signature which you can incorporate.
As they said in the book, the picture is the object. And I guess as long as it is the object to you, then the picture represents the object. That's, you know, it's very interesting. I love the philosophical meaning of a lot of this. I just think it's very satisfying and very wonderful. But anyway, look, thanks a lot for being here with us to discuss some more about radionics. And we'll go to part 2 tonight, which we're going to talk about the Mandela effect. Now, Professor Mulder, why don't you start us out with a little discussion about the Mandela effect and what that is. Now, Chris and Kyler, are both of you a little bit familiar with the Mandela effect? Chris, are you familiar?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Kyler, are you a little familiar with it?
I may have heard of it a while ago, but I can't remember.
Okay. Well, Professor Mulder, why don't you give us a little bit of an update on what is the Mandela Effect? That would be a good first step toward the second part of our discussion tonight.
Okay, fantastic. Well, apparently this it all started with Nelson Mandela out of Africa. Some people remember him dying in prison, and some people remember him dying when Obama was in office, memory serves, and Obama flew over to Africa and was at the funeral and all that. But then again, you have people say, no, he passed away, 15, 20 years ago. And because of this, this little discretion, some people remember him dying, in the early part of, like 5 or 6 years ago, and other people remember him dying, say, back in the late 1990s or early, around 2000, somewhere in that neighborhood, in that area, in that time frame. It kind of started this little phenomenon, where they call it the Mandela Effect. This is the way I understand it. And I really wasn't aware of the Mandela Effect personally until, I would say, about 5 years ago. And here's what got me started. I was looking on a map, and when I was a kid, I always remembered South America being directly south of North America. I always remembered that. And I was looking at a map, and I said, this is kind of weird. I don't remember South America being out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and Brazil's only like 1,500 miles from Africa in this reality. And I always remembered it being directly south. And also, I always remembered that the Panama Canal went from east to west, okay? Now, if you look at it
right,
today,
I'm going to stop you right there, because the purpose of the Panama Canal, when I studied it in high school in geography, the purpose was to connect the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean. And now it seems to connect the Caribbean Sea north of it with the Pacific Ocean. It connects a different body of water. It was supposed to, in fact, I remember studying it, it connected the Atlantic Ocean with the Pacific. That was the purpose of it. And is that consistent, Professor Mulder, with what you know?
Yes, that's exactly the way I understood it. And yeah, the Caribbean, that's kind of a weird, it's kind of weird that you bring that up. But, getting back to this, I even have a good friend of mine, and this guy has a PhD himself. I mean, a highly intelligent gentleman, and he had an occupation where he had to observe things. He had to, understand his surroundings, what they call situational awareness. And this guy, he always had to know where he was at, what he was doing. It was just part of his job. And he told me, he says, I know for a fact, and this was like 20 years ago, he says, I know for a fact I was in Panama, and it went from east to west. Well, here's what happened. If you look, and again, this kind of goes back where I remember Central America being basically more or less a diagonal line. It almost went straight down from the tip of Mexico down to South America. It was almost a little bit of a diagonal straight line. It went from northwest to southeast. But, it wasn't that big of a deal. Now, if you look at Central America now, it's almost at a 45-degree angle, and it's sort of a semicircle. Matter of fact, that changes back and forth. I know it sounds crazy, but it does. It'll go back and forth to a semicircle or a straight line. I've seen that a couple of times myself. And because of that, because South America has to move so far west in order for Central America to still be connected, it had to turn. It had to basically, go eastward also. And so what happened is instead of going basically straight north-south or pretty close to north-south, now it's going, basically having to go east. And because of that, everything else had to fall in line where the Panama Canal had to turn also. Instead of going east-west, now it's going north-south. And like I said, it's the darndest thing I've ever seen. That was one of the interesting phenomena. Now, my question is, Now, here's the weird thing about it. This is what gets me. If you look on any map, I don't care how old it is, where it came from, any edition of a map, they're all going to have these exact same changes on them. It's like you're in an entirely different reality. And that's one thing I noticed there. Also, I think you and I were talking about this the other day, Dr. John, about Cuba. You know, and we even have a mutual friend. His name's Christian, and he was a deep sea diver in the Caribbean, and he knew all about the islands. He had, you know, the geography of the Caribbean. He knew it like the back of his hand. And I had, you know, I was kind of messing with him a couple weeks ago, and I said, Christian, how big do you remember Cuba being? Oh, he said, it's about twice the size of Puerto Rico. And I said, are you sure? I said, yeah. What do you remember it being located at? He said, oh, it was south of the Keys, about 90 miles. I said, are you sure? And I said, I'm positive. I said, and let's do a little experiment here. Let's open up a globe, a world globe or a map. Doesn't make any difference, really, but a globe is more accurate.
Okay, Professor Mulder, I want to stop you, mm-hmm. and I want to make a comment on that. Cuba was 185 miles long. 185 mm-hmm. miles, you can drive in 3 hours. That's not very long, is it?
No, yeah, it's about twice the size of Puerto Rico.
Well, yeah, it's about the size of South Carolina in the middle. I mean, just I remember from geography, Cuba was 185 miles long, and it was like 50 miles wide at its widest.
Mm-hmm.
And now those are numbers mm-hmm. that I remember from a test that I took at Morganton High School. Go Wildcats. please continue. I had to get that factoid out because I remember that.
Exactly. Well, he said, okay, let's do this. So he decided to humor me. He gets, you know, Googles a globe of the earth, and he scrolls down to Cuba, and he goes, what the hell? And I said, well, what have you noticed there? He said, this is not Cuba. I said, well, according to Google, it's Cuba. And but here's what it looks like now. It's about the size of Florida. And the western end of Cuba is in the mouth of the Gulf of Mexico now.
It barricades the Gulf of Mexico now. It's so big.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. Again, it is the size of Florida. So, Cuba, was not that big of a country. It's about... Puerto Rico, I would say almost two Puerto Ricos. It really, that's about the size of where Cuba was. I mean, this is just an example with geography. And I see these things all the time. I've noticed changes in books, for example. Here's a classic. The blank of Dorian Gray. The blank of Dorian Gray. What do you remember that being? The blank of Dorian Gray. What was that word?
The picture.
You remember the picture?
Yeah.
Okay, I remember portrait. So the portrait of Dorian
Gray.
Oh,
okay.
That's what I remember. I mean, that's just what I remember. I was just curious. Okay, but, and also, I mean, it's just a lot of different things. I remember when the Mona Lisa did not smile. Okay, the Mona Lisa... I remember reading an article in Reader's Digest when I was a little kid about why the Mona Lisa did not smile, and apparently it was the painting style of the painter or the artist back at that age. You know, Leonardo da Vinci was one of the people that was using that particular style of no emotion on the face, and they kind of went into detail about that. Well, if you look at the Mona Lisa now, she's smiling. And so it's just changed. That's not the same Mona Lisa, and I was talking to a woman who had a PhD in art history, and she'd been to the Louvre. She'd seen the Mona Lisa in person, right in front of her, and she looked at that very same picture. So that's not the same picture. And I said, well, this is what it is now. It's always been this way, and she was even able to prove that. The next little thing that this is just art. I mean, this is some things I've noticed in art. And again, I hope I don't speed through this. I'm just trying to give a basic overview. the next thing, for example, that I noticed was the changes in organs. And I verified this with three doctors. You know, the kidneys. Everybody remembers the kidneys, you know, the kidney punch in boxing. And the reason why they had the kidney punch in boxing was because the kidneys were exposed and they were very sensitive to any kind of a punch, you know, or what have you. And that, and again, that's the reason why it was illegal to do that in boxing. Well, do you know where the kidneys are at now?
No.
They are. They have relocated. They have risen from their previous location, and now they are protected by the lower two ribs of the rib cage. Another thing I remember, the heart always being left to center, because we always, when we pledge allegiance to the flag, we always put our hand, you know, on the left side of our chest, right? Over our heart. Okay?
Okay.
In this reality,
okay, but please
the heart,
stop. Please stop. I wanna ask. Chris, do you remember putting your left hand over your heart on the left side?
Your right hand.
I remember it's right hand over the left side, so right hand over
correct.
Your heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
right
what
hand
I remember.
Over the left
Kyle,
side. Yeah, right hand
Tyler,
over the left hand.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, same thing.
Okay. I do. That's right. Tell them where the heart is now.
It's center mass of the chest. It's right directly behind the sternum. It's moved.
And that's incorrect.
It's, pardon me?
That's incorrect. You're right. I mean, it's the way it is, but that's not right. That's not the way it was.
That's what I'm saying. So, you know, and you and I were discussing the color of the sun. When we were kids, what color was the sun?
Okay, the sun used to be yellow. Now it's almost white.
Yeah, I remember it being yellow.
I was going to say yellow.
Yeah, it's white.
It's not yellow anymore, Chris. It's almost white.
Yeah, it's changed colors.
You know what's crazy? When I was a kid, I remember never being able to see the moon and the sun at the same time. And now you can.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I've got a big, big question for all three of you. This is the one thing that bothers me the most about reality. Have you ever heard of the phrase, the man in the moon?
Yes.
Okay, Chris,
yes.
You've heard of it?
I have heard
Professor
it. I can't
Mulder.
Tell you exactly what it means.
Right. Okay, Professor Mulder, have you heard of the phrase, the man in the moon?
Yes, I have.
Kyler, have you heard of the phrase, the man in the moon?
I have not, no.
Oh, dear God. Okay, well, what happened was, during the full moon, the moon looked like the ugliest man in the world with a very large bulbous nose and two eyes and a weird smile. That's the way the full moon looked when I was a kid. I'll never forget it. Now, if you will go to Frank Capra's movie, It's a Wonderful Life, it's still there. They can't change that. It's a picture of the ugly old man in the moon. But today, you can't see the man in the moon. He's gone. And the R.E.M. song, Losing My Religion, it used to be, if you believe, there's a man in the moon. Now, today, if you believe, they put a man on the moon. That has changed. I mean, it's nuts. It just is. And I don't know. I have to live through it. Anyway. I'm sorry. I'm going to turn the control of the television set back over to you, Professor Mulder. I hope I didn't get myself in trouble, but I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you guys, how many of you guys were Star Wars geeks when you were kids? You know,
yes.
Watch Star Wars. Okay, everybody knows who C3. Okay, everybody knows who
C-3PO is,
right?
We're gonna go around the room. Dr. John says yes. Kyler, were you a Star Wars geek?
Still am, absolutely.
Okay, Chris, were you a Star Wars geek?
I'm ashamed to say no. I'm going to be the oddball there, I'm sure.
But you do remember it, don't you?
Yes.
Okay. All right, continue, Professor.
Okay, everybody remembers the robot, C-3PO. He was the android-looking fellow, right? He was gold, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Okay, was there any,
no.
Okay, here we go. Was he completely gold?
No, he was silver.
No, he was gold. Well, the reality I came from, he was completely gold from head to toe.
He was silver.
Are you sure?
He is silver. And
we're talking about the android. We're talking about the golden android, right? The one that's not C-3PO,
No, he was a color that is called Goldeen, and it is basically a silver derivative. He was Goldeen because I have a Goldeen coin. Yeah, it's basically silver.
All right, but he was
isn't that crazy?
Okay, well, he was a golden color. In my mind, he was golden. Okay, we're talking about the one that actually spoke. Of the two androids, the one that actually spoke. Okay, all right.
Mm-hmm.
That one right there, I remember him being completely one color from head to toe, one color. Now, if you look at him, his right leg from the kneecap down is silver. The rest of him is gold, or a golden color.
What? And I saw him.
Holy
I
crap.
Saw him as a primarily silver color. Okay, there you go.
Yeah, he's changed colors. Or part of him has changed the color. And so I'm just saying, and I got a friend of mine who is a Star Wars geek, have all the models or whatever. He says, I know for a fact he was completely gold from head to toe, completely gold. And now that, again, the leg, his right leg from the kneecap down is now silver. The rest of him is gold. So that's just an example from movies. Things have changed. Now, here's the one that really got me, and it kind of sealed the deal for me. All right, I don't know how many of you guys are familiar with the King James Version of the Bible. That's probably one of the more popular Bibles used by most Protestant churches, okay? All right, now the Lord's Prayer. This is where it got me. The Lord's Prayer. Let's see. Forgive us our blank as we forgive blank. What was it? Forgive us our blank as we forgive blank. What do you remember?
Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors.
That's what you remember.
And I remember trespasses.
Okay. And anybody else?
No, I don't know this one.
Okay.
Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors.
I remember trespasses. No, I remember trespasses. It was always trespasses when I was a kid. You know, another guy, I've talked to everybody, there's several people, a person who has a doctorate in theology and was very familiar with the King James Version of the Bible, said that it used to be trespasses, now it's debts and debtors. It's changed. It'll go back and forth, by the way. You know, it'll change back and forth. And here's the thing, it will physically change on the page no matter how old the Bible is or, you know, what edition it may be or when it was printed. It doesn't make any difference. Those changes, they're all the way down from the original Bible, from King James Version 1611 to the present day. They all have the very same changes. Also, the word unicorns in the Bible now, matrix, and the word corn, C-O-R-N, as in the grain. Corn is in the Bible now. It's in there several times. As a matter of fact, it's in the Old Testament. It's not in the New Testament. It's in the Old Testament, corn, now, along with the word matrix and unicorn. And so there's some changes there. Oh, yeah, I'm just telling you, it's the strangest thing I've ever seen.
Okay, but
so
now,
here's what we're looking
Professor at. Professor Mulder,
mm-hmm.
You and I discussed what I believe is the most incredible change in history in the Bible. Would you please discuss that?
I prefer you take the floor, please, sir.
Okay. Okay, there's a phrase that says whenever two or gather in my name. Now, I clear my throat. Whenever two or gather in my name, who knows the answer?
I know it as two or more.
That's what I know. Kyler, do you know the answer?
No, I have no idea.
Okay, Chris and I remember two or more whenever two or more gather together. Chris, are you absolutely certain of that?
Yes. I remember two or more gather in my name.
I am 100% certain. Professor Mulder, would you please explain why I just asked that question?
Yes, that's exactly what I remember. Now it's two or three. When two or three gather in my name.
What?
Yeah, it's changed from more to three, the number three. Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought.
What I learned was that when two or more gather in my name, two or more indicates a church.
Yes.
Whether it's me and Kyler, if we gather in the name of the Lord, we are a church. If it's me and Kyler and Chris and Robin McCray, four of us, that's a church.
Mm-hmm.
Two or three is nonsensical.
Yeah.
God, I feel like the men in black are coming to see me tonight.
Oh, this is popular. You get to see this all the time. And I tell you, here's the one that really gets me, because you'll see a thing they call residue. What they mean by residue is when reality hasn't completely shifted over to what the present reality is. Isaiah 11:6, and the blank will lie down with the lamb, and the blank will lie down with the lamb. Does anybody remember what the animal was?
And the lion,
yes,
will lie down with the lamb.
Lion.
Okay, well, that's the way I remember it. That's the way I remember it. Now it is, and the wolf will dwell with the lamb. Lion doesn't exist. Lion lying down with the lamb never existed in
the
Bible.
There's no way.
What?
No. Look it up. It's never existed. It never existed in this reality. You'll never find it. That's no joke. And now it's turned to wolf. How the hell a wolf got into the Middle East during biblical times, I don't know. I always thought they had jackals and, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, that's beside the point. But yeah, that's changed. I'm just telling you, these are actual physical changes in this reality. And, you know, the reason why I bring this up, the reason why I'm such a big nut or whack job when it comes to this kind of stuff, I don't think I'm a whack job. This is what I remember, and I have other people that if they don't remember everything that I remember, they'll remember a majority of it the same way as I do. Okay? And again, these are people who are highly intelligent, who are, have PhDs, you know, doctorates, just like yourself there, Dr. John, and, you know, well-respected and that kind of a thing. And they are saying the same thing and seeing the same things that I am seeing. Now, the whole point of this, the reason why I bring this up is, this proves that reality is fluid. In other words, it changes. It will change from one thing to another. You know, it's now, and again, I don't know exactly why it is doing it this way, but it is doing it. It is changing. It's not exactly the same. And, you know, and I always made a joke with a couple of my buddies, if you don't like this reality, just wait till tomorrow. It'll be different. Okay? And so, yeah, exactly. And so what this proves is that reality is fluid. And that is the reason why radionics works, because it can be altered. Reality can be altered. And again, it's the darndest thing I've ever seen. It truly is. I'm fascinated by it every single day. So I don't know what else to say.
My mind is blown.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's plenty of – why did it change? You know, I've heard, you know, stories like CERN, the particle collider in Europe, you know, that may have been responsible for it. I've heard that quantum computers may be responsible for the changes. I've heard a lot of different things. And again, I have no answer. But, you know, let's look at it this way. We have religious texts that have changed. We have geography that has changed. Anatomy has changed. The, you know, arts, movies, songs, books have changed. You know, the planet, you know, the planetary system, the solar system has changed. The sun is not the same color. You know, and God only knows what's happened to the other planets. I have no clue. And again, I look at this all the time, and I just think that nothing is exactly the way we think it is. And, you know, if things were solid, if they were set in stone, nothing would change like this. You know, the printed word, literally, I don't care how many hundreds of years old it is, or that book is, it will literally change. This, you know, it would be, you know, if we have a change in modern times, if you look at the old books, you know, of the same, you know, of different, you know, from printed from different dates, all have the same identical changes. Maps will all have the same changes. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, you know, this is getting back to movies. What do you guys remember in The Wizard of Oz? What was it that the Tin Man was carrying? What did he have? What was he carrying, you know, when they were going down the Yellow Brick Road?
An axe.
The Tin Man. An axe.
Carrying a container that had oil in it so that he could stay oil.
No, Dorothy was Dorothy was carrying the oil container for him, I believe. No, I remember him carrying an axe. Now he's carrying a pipe wrench.
What?
He's carrying, of all things, a pipe wrench. A giant pipe wrench. Like a plumber.
No, in my reality, he was carrying an oil. It looked like something you'd water flowers with, but it was an oil can. And he would hand it to Dorothy if he needed oil.
Okay, I remember that scene also. Whether or not that still exists, I don't know. But, the Scarecrow. What was the Scarecrow carrying? Does anybody remember?
I remember a basket, maybe. I think so.
The Scarecrow. Is that what you remember?
I don't remember.
Anybody else?
I'm thinking, this is like my favorite childhood movie. I don't remember him carrying anything.
Okay, you guys ready? You want to hear what he's carrying now?
No, sir.
Now he's carrying a revolver.
What?
No, that's
he's packing.
Awful.
He's
That's
packing
impossible.
Now. Look it up. He's packing. He's carrying a handgun.
No, he could not, because at that time, what was the Motion Picture Association of America would not have allowed that.
I don't remember him ever carrying anything. And
no,
now,
I don't
in this
either.
Reality, he has a handgun.
Is he a member of Antifa,
up.
Too?
That is so funny.
Is he
a member
of Antifa or something?
That's just an idea. That's not a reality. Ask the president. This is what's going on. And again, I see this kind of stuff all the time. This is not the way I remember it, but it's the way it is now, and it's the way it always has been this way. And reality is just a fluid thing. It's the darndest thing I've ever seen. It truly is. But any more questions, please?
All right, okay. First of all, Kyler, and then Chris, and then we're going to have to go off into the sunset. So, Kyler, what is your question for the professor?
Well, actually, I wanted to ask kind of on the same thing. Like, do you guys remember, because when I was a kid, I grew up playing Monopoly with the family. And, mm-hmm. you know, back then it was the basic original Monopoly. And I swear to God, that banker dude had a little eyeglass.
Oh, the monocle.
Was it the same for you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the monocle.
No, he doesn't.
No. It never has.
Okay. So I'm not crazy.
No, you're not crazy at all.
Oh, because I remember that too.
Oh, yes, he did,
yeah. Okay.
Fowler.
Yeah, I mean, when we were kids, he used to have a monocle, but now, if you look at it, he never wore it. He never had a monocle in this reality.
Oh, my gosh.
That's so strange.
Good question, Kyler. Chris, you get the last question.
All right.
Before I turn the... Before I could make everyone crazy, okay?
All right. So how many of you used to read – this is what that always blows my mind. How many of you used to like the book? It's a childhood book about a family of bears that lives in a tree. Does anybody remember the name?
The Bernstein Bears.
I remember seeing also.
I remember it as the Berenstain Bears, but apparently in some reality, it's now the Berenstain Bears or something like that. It's completely different.
Yeah,
it was the Bernstein Bears in mine.
No.
Oh, my God. I think might be the first time in public media that we've talked about more than two different examples of the same reality.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Bernstein Bears, but written by some lady named Bernstein. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just the way it was.
Yeah.
I mean, just, come on.
Look it up.
Come on. That's the way it was. I saw it. Okay.
Yeah.
The worst one is Oscar Mayer. I wish I were an Oscar Mayer wiener. That is what I truly like to be. Spell. Meyer of Oscar Meyer.
M-E-Y-E-R-Y.
Yep.
Yeah, M-E-Y-E-R.
Chris?
Yeah, M-E-Y-E-R.
Professor Mulder.
M-E-Y-E-R. Remember the little curly-headed kid talking about the bologna sandwich.
Okay. Let me go to the internet. We're all wrong. Let me go to Oscar Mayer, and I'm going to go right now to it, and it's going to scare the Oscar M-E-Y-E-R. No, it's M-A-Y-E-R, the Oscar Mayer Company.
No.
Yes, it is.
That's not even right.
No. What I love about that one question is everybody gets it wrong. It's M-A-Y-E-R, Oscar Mayer. And you click on it.
I remember
it. And there's the logo with
that.
An M. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I remember that.
That's
little curly-haired kid. He was fishing off the dock, and he was singing the jingle, right? M-E-Y-E-R.
M-E-Y-E-R. I remember it exactly.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I wonder if you can find a video of him singing it stuff.
I doubt it.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
That is so absolutely wrong.
Hey, how many of you guys remember the commercials with Ed McMahon? He would go to your house and hand out the big checks. How many of you guys remember those commercials?
Yeah.
That never existed.
Yes. We're okay. Please, is this Professor Mulder giving this example?
Yes. Yeah.
Give the example. This will blow your mind, gentlemen. professor.
Oh, okay. Ed McMahon, okay, the way I remember it, he worked with Publisher Sweepstakes. The Publisher Sweepstakes or whatever it was. He would come to your house, bring you a giant check, okay, balloons, the fanfare, the whole nine yards. In this reality, he never did that. He never worked for him.
Oh, well, sure he did.
He never. Well, in this reality, he never worked for them. I think he worked for American Publishers. Yeah, it's the Publishers Clearinghouse Sweepstakes. Publishers Clearinghouse. That's what I remember.
He was like Debbie Boone was Pat Boone's daughter. Come on, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember several years ago, a couple at the church we used to go to. We had a fall festival. They dressed up as Ed McMahon and the lady in her, like her her robe answering the door, like in her pajamas, with the balloons and everything and the big check. He absolutely did.
Right.
Sure he did.
In this reality, he never did. Look it up. He never.
He was with American Family Publishers. Is that correct?
That's what they say now.
It's wrong. It's totally wrong. He was with both of them, actually. All right. Well, we've had fun. Listen, we've had a blast. Professor Mulder, will you come back in a couple of weeks and let's just laugh and have a good time?
Yes, let's do it. I'm sure I'll come up with something. You know, all I got to do is just talk about reality. I'm sure we'll find a chuckle or two.
We will. And you know what? I've got a secret to tell everybody. I was introduced to Professor Mulder a week ago, and he has become one of my most entertaining friends that I ever talked to. He really is, and he is not afraid to talk to you, and he doesn't try to hurry you up and hang up. I'll say that he is one of the most enjoyable friends that I've ever had to talk to. And by the way, if you want to see a demonstration of a psionics machine, of a radionics machine, because apparently Professor Mulder, psionics machines seem to be synonymous with radionics machines, and it seems like I have some mix-up because of the Mandela effect. But anyway, he's going to be at the North Carolina Bigfoot Conference June 17th in Burnsville, North Carolina. He and I are going to be doing a 30-minute session at 12 o'clock high noon about radionics for 30 minutes. Then we're going to go eat a club sandwich they're going to provide for us, and then we're going to get back to the conference. But Professor Mulder, are you excited about being at the North Carolina Bigfoot Conference?
Yes, I can say I'm actually excited about doing this. And I just found out about it 2 minutes ago. I'm just kidding. I'm definitely.
Unless you're trying to pretend that this is a Mandela effect, you've known about it for at least 4 days. I mean, golly.
Okay.
But anyway, want to thank you for agreeing to be there. I want to thank you for being on ScaryCast Thursday. I'm going to get you on ScaryCast Monday, a week from Monday. Would you come on and hang out with Robin McRae and Dr. Trey Dunaway and Chris and me? Would you do that?
Well, since it's you fine people, why not?
Thank you. Okay, all right. Now, Chris, you get another chance at him, but Kyler Smith, an alumni of Monday Night, if you want to join us, you would be welcome. Fair enough?
That's awesome. Thank you.
Come on, Kyler.
Absolutely. We love you. Kyler, we love having you. You're like one of a kind. I don't know which kind, but you're one of a kind. Oh, my God, that was the worst. That was the worst joke. And on that note, I'm going to say, this is Dr. John Stamey signing off of ScaryCast Thursday night. It's been the most fun with Professor Mulder. He is truly one of the most engaging, entertaining people that I know. And I've had two of my favorite co-hosts, Chris Chastain and Kyler Smith. Guys, we love to have you. We enjoy it, and it's going to be a lot of fun next week. We've got to get a guest. I got to work on it. But thank you so much, and everybody can see me on Saturday at the Western North Carolina Bigfoot Festival with Christian McLeod. We're going to be there in front of all the speakers, and I got all my flyers and everything made today, so it's going to be a blast. So I'll see everybody Saturday at the Western North Carolina Bigfoot Conference. I got to get it exactly right. And we'll see you next week. Scarycast Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, the best number one paranormal network in the world. And we do it because, Chris, why do we do this? Why do we do Scarycast? Why do we do this?
For the Bigfoots.
Okay.
One
Kyler,
reason.
Kyler, why do we do this?
Dang, that was a pretty good answer. I was just going to say because it's fun.
Because it's fun? Thank you, because I do it because I love it. There's nothing more I would rather do than Scarycast and have a great time with incredible guests.
Well, shoot, I thought that was just understood. It's fun.
That's all right. Come on. But no, and to have great guests like Dr. Mulder, Professor Mulder. So thanks a lot, everybody. I'm going to let everybody go. Say good night. Now, I'm on my cell phone, so I'm going to have a hard time. Hopefully I can cancel the show, but if not, everybody say goodbye, okay?
All right. Goodbye.
Bye, guys.
I'm stuck here on the Oscar Mayer page. This is terrible. I mean, this is like real, you know? It's like we don't know what to do. We're stuck on the Oscar Mayer page, and I can't stop the show. It's all right. It's great.
Oh, everybody's I got saying. Another one for you. Smithsonian Blank. Smithsonian Blank, the big museum in Washington, D.C. What do you remember? Smithsonian.
Oh, I know what you're going to ask. It was the Smithsonian Institute, not institution.
Ah. Oh, that's the way I remember it, but apparently I was wrong about that, too.
That's great. It was the Smithsonian Institute. I know that for sure. All right, well, look, thanks. Maybe I can figure out how to stop this episode. Lord, get me out of here. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Oh, my God.